Jason, the Bears played well, and then they didn't, and then they did again, and they won a close game at the end. We'll break down the Steelers, or the victory over the Steelers, coming up on Allison Tree. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. Jason, 31-28, Bears at Soldier Field. The Bears improved to 8-3, and before I start asking you about whether it's too early to start thinking playoffs, let's talk about how they got there. They got there with a defense that was banged up, a quarterback that was good, but also wildly inconsistent. And they got there with yet another late game stop and big play from Jaquan Brisker, who tipped a Mason Rudolph pass from midfield on fourth down to clinch the victory.
It was a big play at the end, but this wasn't as frantic and wild as some of their other late wins to me. This was a little more solid than that, Patrick, where you have them leading in the third quarter, leading by 10 in the fourth quarter, surviving a late touchdown by Pittsburgh. Obviously, the Bears could have put this away more decisively and earlier, but I think it was a little bit more solid than some of the other ones. And Caleb Williams, while his day is certainly worth getting into, there was a lot going on there. I think he was better than he was last week against Minnesota. I think everything about this was more solid, even taking into account that they're playing against a backup quarterback in Mason Rudolph. I think this was more solid than they looked in the Vikings game.
Yeah, it's hard to be too overtly critical of a quarterback who went 19 for 35 for 239 yards, three passing touchdowns, and a passer rating of 104.3. He had two passes to DJ Moore for a touchdown, including one on a broken play that was very Aaron Rodgers-y, if you want to get into that. But, you know, the big mistake people are going to point to, of course, is what happened in his own. So,
yeah, the sack that he took on, well, a strip sack from Watt that ended up a Steelers touchdown, it was really concerning. I think there was a point where that gets to a point at which there's not much he can do. When TJ Watt has him wrapped up and has his right arm pinned down, there's only so much he's going to be able to do to protect the ball at that point and try to take the safety, theoretically. My problem was more so, why did he drop back? They started that on the 10. They snapped that ball from their own 10-yard line. They were not backed up against the goal line necessarily. There's got to be more awareness that you just can't do that. You can't drop back 13 yards behind the line of scrimmage on a play like that, Patrick.
Yes, the second play of the second quarter, second and 20, Caleb Williams drops back, sees Watt rushing kind of over his right, and he was saying after the game he could have thrown the ball away, which he probably should have done. He could have done a lot of different things, but he decided to essentially backpedal directly into the end zone. And by the time Watt got his hands on Caleb, he had both of his arms pinned down. Now, Caleb could have fallen to the ground and taken a safety, and that certainly would have been better than him fumbling it and it being recovered for a touchdown by the Steelers. But he was saying, you know, it just shouldn't get to that point. He just needs to throw the ball in the fourth row, particularly if he can get outside the tackles there, so it's not an intentional grounding penalty.
And he still needs some work on some basics like that. I mean, there's the whole issue of throwing accuracy, which we can get into in a minute too. That was a problem Sunday as well. But there's just some basics that he needs to be a little more locked in on mentally. And that's part of the growth. I think that is something that Ben Johnson will continue to help him with, though. I think I still see a really good fit here between this coach and this quarterback.
Yeah, and they're 8-3. That's I think that only reinforces what you and I see every day, which is that this thing seems to be going in the right direction. One basic that I think was huge and really could have been a giant deal was the Bears had 3rd and 8 the last time they had the ball, except for the kneel downs, and the Bears are it's their second to last possession, and they're at 3rd and 8, and Caleb Williams gets to the line of scrimmage with 12 seconds left. And stands there and watches the clock tick down to 0 and they take a delay game. He said afterwards the Bears were just lined up the wrong way and they didn't have enough time to fix it. And Ben Johnson sure as heck wasn't going to burn a timeout that he might need later. But that really proved to be a big deal because on 3rd and 13, he hits Colson Loveland for an 11-yard completion that might have sealed the game had they not taken that penalty beforehand. And, you know, all's well that ends well, I guess, but that does bring us back to some of their major concerns about him at the beginning of the year was, how in the world are you going to sort through all of these pre-snap mistakes so you can go out there and play football without hurting yourself?
Real quick there, when they get that completion to Loveland, just a quick aside before we get back to this conversation, and they have 4th and 2 at their own 40, up 3 with a little under 5 minutes, Pat, how much are you, if you get to make the call, how much consideration are you giving to going for it in that situation?
I'm kicking it 100 times out of 100 because
really?
I don't want.
Wow.
The Steelers are really.
You love to go for it.
I do love to go for it.
100 out of 100 times, Pat?
You've got a backup quarterback playing for the Steelers, and you have Chris Boswell, who is one of the league's best deep ball field goal kickers. And, you know, if you don't get it there, they're pretty much in field goal range. And I think that, especially with your defense being, you know, full of backups on it, I wouldn't trust my defense to push him backwards there. You know, had it been a half yard, I think maybe we've got a different discussion, but you know, it was pretty much 2 full yards, and I think that gets a lot more difficult.
I think that, I mean, I probably make the move to kick because I'm not super scared of the Steelers offense at that point, but I would have thought about it. I mean, it wouldn't have been 100% punt for me. I would have given it some thought. I would have been tempted, especially at that, you know, you're kind of in the middle of the field. I just thought you'd be a little more trigger happy to go for it, because I think you usually are. But back to what you were talking about, the delay of game. This is one of those things where Ben Johnson has bought Caleb Williams some margin for error here, because they have gotten so many other things right and they are continuing to win. If instead of being 8-3, they were 3-8 and had that happen today, win or lose, I think we'd be hammering that a lot harder. They keep making the point. Caleb and Ben Johnson, you hear Caleb every week, you hear him parroting Ben Johnson a little bit more, and you hear him saying it on Sunday, it's a lot easier to learn these things from victories, to be able to win, not have these mistakes cost you something in the standings, and you still get to learn from them. I think that because they are out to this 8-3 start, because they have gotten so many things right in their offense, where they are one of the best offenses statistically in the league right now, we are not hammering some of these. We have now accepted, I think, us, the media, and probably the fan base, I would think, have accepted that there's some more of the turbulence of the transition year and the acclimation period. And now we're saying, okay, I think we all think a little bit, okay, well, you know, there'll be a little more of this. It's going to be a little rocky. It's going to be a little choppy. You know, next year, though, we're not tolerating any of this.
Well, I think it's twofold. I think you can acknowledge that at 8-3, they're doing a lot right, you know, even if it's against teams that they should beat. But now we're getting to the part in the season when your margin of error is going to be minuscule. I mean, short of a home game against the Browns in a couple of weeks, my presumption is the Bears are going to be underdogs in every game they play the rest of the season. They are, in order to make the playoffs, going to have to find a way to steal one or two. And in order to beat the Packers twice, or the 49ers on the road, or the defending champion Eagles on Friday, or the Lions at home, you're going to have to play some pretty good football. And eventually stuff like that will jump up and bite in the butt if you're not careful. And I think the Bears are fortunate that the Steelers were playing with who they were playing with today, which was Mason Rudolph. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, we should probably mention his name 7 minutes into the show here, but yeah. Aaron Rodgers, who broke his wrist a week ago, a little more than 2 hours before kickoff, Mike Tomlin said, yeah, he's not going to play. And he said after the game, you know what? He'll probably play next week. So maybe shades of kind of the Jalen Johnson, Kyler Gordon thing here, Jason, where you're saving them and hoping that you get them at full strength for the rest of the season. But, you know, on Friday, Mason Rudolph's not going to be the quarterback. Jalen Hurts is going to be the quarterback. And there are going to be a couple of receivers that are just as good as DK Metcalf, who, by the way, was off and on the field today because of an ankle injury. And boy, that defensive line's, you know, going to be better than even the Eagles, or than even the Steelers' defensive line was. So the Bears are going to have to start playing a really, you know, they're going to have to start playing a B-plus or an A-minus game in order to have a chance to win. And I think that we both acknowledge that you got to cut out some of these mistakes in order for that to even be a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, think how limited Mason Rudolph was Sunday. And Aaron Rodgers is limited at this phase of his career too, but not to this extent. Most of the time that you saw Mason Rudolph drop back to throw deep, which wasn't much, was probably five times or fewer in the game, I kept wondering if that ball had come out correctly out of his hand. I mean, it just looked, they were so, the best adjective for it is interceptable. It feels like every time Mason Rudolph was getting ready to throw it downfield, it was going to be an interceptable ball. Just by the way it came off his hand, it just had that look to it. I will say, as much as you're right about everything you just said about what lies ahead for them outside of a home game against Cleveland, these are a lot of tough games. This was a tough game for them, even against the backup quarterback for the Steelers. The Steelers, very good defense, first place in their division. The fact that they're 8-3 is definitely A, progress for the Bears, and B, worth celebrating if you're the Bears. The Bears have not had a winning season since 2018. That's the fourth longest drought in the NFL. 8 wins, just right now, 8 wins matches. It's more than Matt Eberflus ever won in a season, and it matches the best season Nagy had after that first one. 8-3 from here, if you win one more game, which probably you would have to think they would have a very good chance at home against Cleveland, and you finish above 500, 9-8, that is a big step forward for the Bears. And they have guaranteed themselves at 8-3 that they're going to be in the playoff race for at least a little while still.
Yeah, they're going to be on that little CBS and Fox graphic probably through the end of the season. They are going to be in the hunt at the very least, and right now they're atop their division. Jason, I've been covering the Bears since 2013, Mark Trestman's first year. Do you know how many teams I've covered that have won more than 8 games?
More than 8. Is it just the Nagy year, that first Nagy year?
It's one, and it ended with the double doink. So this is new territory for them and for me and for all of us. And I think you and I do a pretty good job of acknowledging reality, you know, that they are playing some of these bad teams and beating them, and also acknowledging what they need to do to get where they want to be. And where they want to be is not 8-3. Where they want to be is winning playoff games, something that I'll remind you, I don't think they've done since Lovie Smith. So yeah, you know, we always knew this season would kind of be dual paths. It would be, you know, you've got a veteran enough roster to go and be competitive, and then you have a quarterback and a new offensive system that was going to take some time to meld. And we heard Ben Johnson on Friday talk about kind of Caleb's at the point now where he can process the game plan during the course of the week. He knows how to put in enough work to get the Bears where they need to be before the game starts. He, you know, knows how to fine tune or how to communicate so the coaches can fine tune what he's good at, and what he's bad at each given week. These are really, really big steps. And, you know, in some sense, more important than a win or a loss on Sunday, when you're talking about the overall direction of the franchise, but that the Bears are able to bring the offense along and win games in the process is the best possible scenario. Like if I would have told you in August, 8-3 going into Black Friday.
Oh, I would not have believed you. No.
Right.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, you would have sat there and said, what, did all the AFC North quarterbacks fall down a well or something? And the answer is yes, more or less they did. Because the Bears have now won a game. What's funny, I mean, it's like the Simpsons episode with all the Major League Baseball players. They're all just disappearing.
Right.
When they play the Browns in 2 weeks, Jason, the Browns are, you know, whether it's Dylan Gabriel or whether it's Shedeur Sanders, the Browns are going to be starting a quarterback who was not their starting quarterback at the beginning of the year. That was Joe Flacco. So it will mean that the Bears, that all four AFC North teams that the Bears have faced this season have faced them with the guy who they didn't think was going to be their quarterback at the time or when the season started.
Yeah, that
is
crazy.
Remarkable.
It really is. They have been the beneficiary of some good fortune at times. They really have.
Sure.
But
yeah.
But if we go back to your point about dual paths, the big picture, the important goal, if you and I sat and talked about, we're not talking about standings or result or records or can they beat team A or can they beat team C? If you and I sat at the beginning of the season and said, what needs to happen this year? We would say Caleb Williams needs to make strides we would say we need to see a coherent offense from Ben Johnson, which is something the Bears have not had in years. I'm not sure when the last time they had it, because I don't think they had it under Nagy.
It would be the first Mark Trestman year they finished second in the league in offense. That's probably
Not even sure you could say that there was clearly a coherent offense that good year with Nagy. So you need to see that. You need to see all that snapping into place. And when he hires somebody like Dennis Allen as defensive coordinator, who is not going anywhere, he's not leaving for a head coaching job. That's probably not going to happen again for him in his career. So he has the opportunity to be here for a long time. You need to see signs that Dennis Allen is the man for that job. Those are the things you need to see going into this year. Maybe some rookie development, like with Luther Burden and Colston Loveland and Ozzie Trapillo, things like that. Those are all the important things you would say. Those things got to happen, no matter what. And then to say underneath all of that, they are going to win along the way while doing those things, no matter how it's done or who it's against. That's a win-win for the Bears. Now, if you want to look from here and you want to say, well, let's look at the downside. Let's take the pessimistic view of what's left for them. You would say, well, they've only beaten bad or mediocre teams, and now they're going to play all the good ones, and that is probably going to expose them, and you won't be able to get away with any of what they've done, and any of their wins probably won't be good enough to beat the really good teams that they're about to face. But if you want to look at the brighter outlook of the more optimistic view here, they get a chance to prove that they can step up to those teams. It's right there in front of them. That's not decided that they can't do that. It's in front of them able to do that, and they might be getting healthier as they go into that challenge.
It's almost impossible to get less healthy than they are as you and I sit here right now. One of the things that was missing, I think, from your list, Jason, was Ben Johnson. You needed to know that Ben Johnson could be a real head coach. You know, the NFL is filled with great coordinators who just can't make the leap. And, you know, Ben did. And I think, you know, somebody asked me the other day whether I'm confident in Ben because of the quarterback or vice versa. And I think I'm confident in the quarterback because of Ben Johnson. And that is really, really good news because he can stay here, obviously, far longer than the length of a playing career if he wants to. And you're right, it is all in front of them. They have a chance to level up. And, you know, I don't think they're going to do so unless they get healthier. You have Tremaine Edmonds, who they put on IR on Saturday. Ben Johnson said after the game today that he is probably going to come back. You have got TJ Edwards, who's out, and Noah Sewell. Reuben Hippolyte, who filled in for those linebackers today, he left the game, as did Tyreek Stevenson. You've got a chance to get Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon back. Maybe in time for the Friday game. That should provide a big boost. And, you know, the hope is that a team that has said for weeks now that they want to play their best football in December, you know, that they have a defense out there that's capable of doing that, because, you know, you just gave up 28 points to Mason Rudolph. You know, Jordan Love probably would have hung a lot more than that on you. So you need to have those guys ready to go.
When you bring up their defense, first off, it is worth noting they gave up 21 points defensively.
Okay, fair enough.
But it made me think of, not just to correct you, but I also had a question for you. How do you compare the job that Dennis Allen has done as a problem solver compared to the job Matt Eberflus did defensively in the same regard?
That's a good question.
Eberflus obviously dealing with some roster deficiencies. Mm-hmm. Allen dealing with injury-related deficiencies.
I think that there were times, at least last year and the year before, when Matt Eberflus was a hell of a defensive coordinator. And, you know, you can say what you want about his clock management and his ability to be a head coach, and that doesn't take away from the fact that he could really call defensive plays. And he had to go against grain. And I think there's some similarity here. Dennis Allen doesn't want to have to blitz on every down. Matt Eberflus didn't want to have to blitz all the time. But, you know, they've wound up doing it when they needed to, because, you know, the Bears don't have all-time world-beating defensive linemen right now. Although I will tell you, and I'm surprised it took me this long to bring it up, Montez Sweat was amazing today. Two sacks, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, and should have had a third. And he had Mason Rudolph kind of wrapped up, and he flipped out of it. And Sweat was bemoaning that after the game, saying that, you know, he had never had a hat trick in his career before. But if this is what Sweat is the rest of the year, the Bears defense starts to make a heck of a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and whoever lines up opposite him has a chance to be pretty good too. I mean, you've seen guys opposite Montez Sweat that were not great pass rushers. When he's at his best, those guys get in on the action too. You did mention at one point during this Aaron Rodgers, and I want to go back to that. He ends up not playing in what would have been his final game at Soldier Field. He said he's pretty sure he's retiring at the end of the season. So I guess that makes his last game at Soldier Field, the 2022 game. What was your level of disappointment as a viewer of this, that Aaron Rodgers didn't get one last shot at the Bears at Soldier Field?
I think it's the same as everybody else's, really, is that I wanted to see him out there. And, you know, I know it was a debate on sports talk radio all week, like, do you want the Bears to win or do you want Aaron Rodgers to play? I didn't never really looked at it like that. I'm not sure that the Steelers' odds of winning really went up that much with Rodgers playing, but this is somebody who is, you know, on the list of the great villains in the history of Chicago sports. And why in the world wouldn't you want him out there? Even if he's old and gray and battered, like that's, you know, that's something that we may have wound up telling our kids about. Mason Rudolph on a Sunday afternoon is not. So, I was disappointed in that regard. I think that just for pure drama, boy, you couldn't beat that. And that's, you know, I had the impression, and, you know, you and I, Lord knows we've been through these opposing quarterback injury things enough in the last 6 weeks that maybe we should be better at it by now, but it's really hard to feel the vibe of everything from thousands of miles away. And you know, nonetheless, I think you and I both looked at Pittsburgh and thought, oh my God, they're probably going to play it. And then for them to come out even before inactives were announced on Sunday and say, no, he's not going to, but he will play next week. I thought that was disappointing.
I think even at 41 and injured on his non-throwing hand, I think he would have scrapped together his best. That just whatever was I think this would have been sort of his Super Bowl. And I know that he played the Packers already this year, but that you know, it wasn't in Lambeau. It might've been a little different. I think it would have been on that level though, for him, of max motivation, scraping together the best possible game he could have played. And I want to see that. I want to see a guy who's been who's been dominant, who's been a champion, even if he's at the end. I want to see him with his back against the ropes and max motivation, what he can do. I would have liked to have seen it.
Well, and I think one thing that would have happened had he played was I don't think the Steelers would have run the ball 36 times. And as it turns out, the Steelers were fantastic on the ground. They averaged 5.2 yards a carry. They had that 55-yard carry by Kenneth Gainwell off of kind of the fake tush push where he took a handoff from the tight end. And really had their way with the Bears defense, particularly, you know, in the first three quarters of the game. In a sense, maybe Rodgers dropping to pass back to pass more than Rudolph would have helped the Bears, given how bad they were against the run. Yeah, you just wish you'd seen it. I'd be remiss, Jason, before we go, if I didn't bring up, you know, we talked about, you know, the defense and what they were dealing with, but, you know, they wound up with some really back of the roster guys who they had to rely on Sunday. And, you know, one of those guys is Amon Ogbonbamija. Did I say that right, Jason?
Ogbonbamija. Bamiga.
Bamiga. Hard G, not soft G. By the way, soft G was my nickname in high school. Amon wound up with 14 tackles. DeMarco Jackson, who most people in Chicago could not pick out of a crowd if he was wearing a DeMarco Jackson jersey, had 15 tackles. So you have these two guys who, you know, would not play in most scenarios other than special teams, combining for 29 tackles. I think that shows you a couple of things. Number one, how often the Steelers ran the football. Number two, how often Mason Rudolph threw over the middle as opposed to taking chances outside. But credit to both those guys for hanging in there in a really, really tough situation.
I also want to point out one more thing before we go, and it's about the Bears' running game. It wasn't working.
Nope.
Until about the start of the fourth quarter, it kind of broke through, and it was your guy. It was the guy that you would buy a jersey of, I think. Kyle Manungai got it, kind of shook it loose a little bit, and ends up scoring at the end of that touchdown run to put them up by 10. I think you've seen enough now that you can make a call on this. Is Kyle Manungai something? or is he just a temporary answer here?
I think he's something. I don't think we should confuse something with starter or majority player. I think that as we go forward in the next year in 2 and 3, Ben Johnson's going to use two guys, maybe three. And that Kyle, I think, has done enough this season to probably guarantee that he's going to be one of those three guys or two guys. Whether he's the starter, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you're going to replace, you know, Swift this offseason, you know, maybe Manel Guy does end up being that guy. But he runs the way that I think Ben enjoys having a running back run, which is forcefully straight ahead, not a lot of screwing around, which is one of the issues they had with Swift last year, was he just danced too much. And you have somebody who, Jason, it was, you know, what, we were at Soldier Field in what, July for Family Fest? Mm-hmm. And I asked Ben Johnson about rookies, and he said, I trust Kyle Manungai. That was July. That was before they ever played a game. And, you know, so there's something about him that I think transcends necessarily what he does on Sundays that Ben Johnson likes. And yeah, I think he's absolutely a thing.
He's hyper-disciplined about running the way you said, about that north-south style of running, hit the hole. The play is that's why Ben Johnson likes it, because Ben Johnson schemes up these plays for there to be an opening for that running back. And the plan is you hit that opening immediately because that's what it's there for, and then see what you can get after that. But take what I have schemed up for you. And I don't know that there is always that kind of discipline from DeAndre Swift about that. He has been better this season than last, no doubt about that. Anybody could see that. But I think Kyle Manungai was made that way from the start. And part of that is his entire NFL career, what are we talking about, 6 months or so, 7 months right now, has been with Ben Johnson and Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, it makes you think that Ben Johnson would like if his quarterback was a little more on time and playing within the scheme of the offense. But yeah, Manungai came up big for them. Caleb Williams, I believe, at one point threw the ball in on 16 consecutive plays. That's probably not the formula that Ben would prefer, but it was working there for a while. We'll see what happens Friday against the Eagles. Real quick, and then we'll go with the Eagles coming up, Jason. Is this just one of those games where they're probably going to have to wear it and hope they get out of there healthy enough and enjoy their 10 days before the Packers? Or is there a scenario where they actually play a pretty good game here?
Well, that's up to them, and that's part of why this is so intriguing as they play all these good teams is, can you do it? Can you rise to the level of all of these opponents like them and Green Bay, Detroit again, who beat you, who put 50 on you earlier in the season, San Francisco, who we know is good. Can you do it? I don't know. I will say, like you mentioned with Aaron Rodgers, it's hard to know what's really going on at a place when you're not there. On one hand, if you're paying attention to everything that is said about the Eagles, it's a disaster. But if you look at the standings and you look at them being the defending champions, it seems like everything's going just fine. So I think that the Bears will have their hands full. They'll be a sizable underdog, and they should be, because they haven't proven yet that they can beat teams like that. They haven't proven that they can play with teams like that. They haven't had that many opportunities. A lot of the teams that they've played, even the ones they've lost to, have been just kind of okay teams. So it will be a really interesting measurement of how real their progress is.
You could argue that it's been 10 weeks since they've had a chance like this. And that was Week 2 against the Lions, to take your biggest swing and try and knock out somebody bigger and stronger than you. And it'll be really interesting to see how it goes. And it'll be interesting to monitor just exactly how healthy the Bears are in the short week leading up to it. Jason, we will do exactly that during the course of the week. Until then, you can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a newspaper. He is Jason. I am Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.